You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
How are you?
And it's me, Brian. And on this hot and sticky and sweaty episode, we are covering the hot and sticky and sweaty anime that aired during the hot and sticky sweaty week of August the 3rd to August the 9th, 2020. With loads of exceptions, which we shall begin with. As, let me bring those notes over to this screen, so I'm not going to be constantly looking off to the side if you're watching the video on YouTube. Super Shiro, episode 39, The Life of Ants.
This episode and a few of the other episodes makes me think, we should just give that dog the bone, man. He's all right. That's the guy I want in fucking chairs. I'd vote for him for world president.
As well, and it's been so long that I forgot. Oh, yeah, they did a whole thing about establishing that the Super Shiro badge has all those extra functions to it. Yes. Like, oh, yeah.
My notes for this episode just read the one line, Dekapu implements Kaizen, because it involves them, investigating the life of ants, because the Mamone has been taken in by some ants, and Dekapu's threatening these ants' lives, and Shiro can't have any of it, so he shrinks Dekapu small. But then Dekapu's like, well, now I can just get into the ant hill, and I can get the bone easily. So Shiro follows him, and then they're disguised as ants, and then Dekapu starts implementing continuous improvement measures in the anthill, which gets him promoted further up the management chain of ants to the point where he forgets that he was a dog at all.
So, like, they're running around the anthill, running away from the army ants, the soldier ants, I should say. But I love the fact that they come across in the random place of the anthill a room full of ant costumes for just such a situation, which I was like, I guess it does come up a lot, right?
Well, ants are so small, you don't know what they're wearing down there.
And little ant booties. But yeah, Dekapu gets too involved in pretending to be an ant with the worker ants and the fights for worker rights.
Yeah.
It is that, but it felt like more like a typical Japanese Kaizen management thing.
Oh, at the end, especially when he's like, oh, give that guy a good meal.
Because the first thing he does is looks at this one particular thing they're doing of bringing these things in and realizes that that's too much. Then we can do a small improvement here. And it will greatly improve the workers, greatly improve productivity and the lives of the workers.
He fights for a fucking 2-day weekend as well, man.
He does, but again, like that is that might also be a Kaizen thing, if like saying you got to treat the workers.
It's more about working what's smarter and not harder.
Yes.
Yeah, because after a certain point, if we're not giving you 2 days off because not necessarily just because, oh, you guys deserve it, you need it more so. After a certain upper limit, productivity drops, so you need some days to rest.
So
even if it's good for the company, it is good for the worker ants, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah. And then it's only when the shrinking wears off that he remembers, oh yes, I was a dog.
It's like Kafka's Metamorphoses or something.
Hmm. Excuse me while I blow my nose.
Bless you.
Okay. And then, of course, the bone explodes. Because it's not the real bone. Once more. Then, Super Shiro episode 40, Sunday Golf. Where Shiro goes to the golf course with Shin-chan's papa.
He's there trying to make impress the client enough that he'll get the big... the big merger. I'm not exactly sure what the actual thing he's doing, but if he treats him well at golf, the guy will go for it.
God lands a big Mr. Ha 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 contract.
I love that guy's big comedy golf pants.
Yes.
It's got two giant legs.
And this time the bone is the ball. Which leads to... this is where there's like a run of these gags in these episodes that we've watched. We've watched five episodes of Super Shiro this week.
We got to catch up. I think this is working out today, as far as I saw. I was just like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. This is where it starts getting super cartoony with the bunker gap, where they start moving the bunker around.
Yeah.
Like moving the hole with the stick, that kind of thing. There's some really good cartoony stuff.
Yeah. There's the whole Tom and Jerry thing where Deckapoo, disguises himself as a golf club so he can catch the ball in his mouth.
Let me just morph my entire body like I'm in a plasticine. You think the head of him is just like, yeah, that is a perfect golf club disguise. It's pretty good.
And then the bone blows up again.
It wasn't the bone. It was a golf ball. It was a really nice smelling golf ball.
Yeah. Well, that's what Shiro gets for stealing, because he didn't even get it via fair means. It is robbed it out of the golf bag when he got home later to the house.
But it was for justice. and Shin Chan's dad, he made the deal. So it all worked out pretty good. There's some really good cartoony moving things that shouldn't be able to be moved gags in this.
Then we get episode 41, One Sleepless Night.
Where you better believe it.
All of the Crow explains that... is it All of the Crow explains? I can't remember who explains it. Basically, they've got to go to... there's a flower which will bloom, and All of the Crows shows at the end. That's it. Yes. No, the explanation is that this flower will bloom, and you've only got a moment when it blooms to get the bone on the stamen of the flower. And so it's basically Shiro and Deckapoo trying to stay up all night and trying to make the other one go to sleep so they can be the one to catch the bone when it blooms. And then it becomes a gag where Deckapoo draws a circle around Shiro and he says, I've claimed everything outside of the circle, so you can't leave that circle. Which then I was like, is it The Odd Couple? I know you guys are watching The Odd Couple for...
It's not so much like the, draw a line.
I did like him going to extending the circle so that the flower was inside it and then putting each other in circles. Like it escalates from this childish game to cartoon antics where they can lift up the circle and move it around. how did you lift up a line you drew in the dirt? That's crazy. And then hula hoop the other guy inside the circle while he is asleep, while singing him to sleep, because that's what it becomes as well. It just escalates into just complete zaniness, and it's great crack.
And then Orla comes and sings the lullaby they've been singing to each other, to the pair of them.
Backup insects. Yeah.
Yes.
Beautiful singing voice, as we know.
And then they completely miss the flower blooming and it wilts, but that's okay because the day has been saved once again.
There's a run of a couple of these where it feels like if there was no intervention by either dog at all, things would probably work out all right.
Well, it was never the bone, so it would have been fine.
What if it is this time?
Yeah. What if it is? But it never is.
Then we get Super Shiro episode 42. The hero catches a cold, in which Deckapoo cares for Shiro when Shiro catches a cold. So basically, Shiro is not up to stopping Deckapoo from getting the bone this time. But Super Shiro is ill enough to make Deckapoo feel guilty that he's constantly being interrupted in his attempt to get the bone in order to care for Shiro.
I want to win, but not like this. Where's the sport?
It's very, what's that freaking trope where I don't even like you kind of thing. It's like, I'm not going to take care of you when you're sick. And he's there like, blown on the soup and feeding him.
Not gonna snuggle you to my bosom. No, I won't do that.
Righty ho. Yes, and then we also learn that the folk bones also blow up for Deckapoo when he tries to use them.
Get to see his old deal. Goes down to the secret lab. He has an I Am President machine, which is a dog Mount Rushmore. He goes the whole hog and getting into the suit. I'm gonna put the bone in here, and boom, President. And boom, indeed.
He doesn't do it by halves, though. So I wouldn't mind him getting a few more wins to see what other presidential attire or stuff he's going to have next time.
Or maybe, no. Seems like a fun enough team to do, and they're trying to vary it up somewhat, so why not?
Super Shiro, episode 43. Run, flee, and follow.
So this was like a summation of like a few episodes that they've done already, which is nice.
Going back to our old, a lot of our old locations, yeah. Getting the side characters back in for our little cameos. Yeah, I don't know. It feel like they didn't necessarily kind of stop, like fit. You know, despite that kind of gap, a couple of weeks, Tom was like kind of just waiting for the suburbs to get around to it. But it just kind of felt like if you hadn't seen Super Serial in a while, this is a good way to remind yourself of all the good bits of it.
Mm.
It is. Also, look over there. There's a cat doing a Cossack dance.
Where? Oh, man, there it is.
Yeah, it's, but they basically chase each other through previous episode locations. And all of, we get all of the crow doing his thing about wanting Decapoo's cream puffs. And Can-Can shows up at the end. And, yes, it's a summation of the series so far, which I guess is probably something to do with the name of the next week's episode. The Mysterious Boba Bone. So are we actually finding it next week?
Are you going to explain how you become president with this? Why something that smells really fucking good would make you a president?
It's, I don't know, aromatherapy. I'm going to guess it's aromatherapy. So it's a relaxing scent that chill the whole world out and bring peace.
I like the fact that the bone was at another park in the 43rd district. And Decapoo noting that this is the 35th time that Shiro has got to the bone first.
I must actually kind of go back and check now to see what district they go to.
It's the episode numbers. Number.
Yeah.
Don't worry, the person fan subbing it only noticed that around episode 38.
Okay.
So that's where I learned it from. I wouldn't have not noticed. I'd have gone all the way through not realizing that the districts were corresponding to the episode number. Ooh, good stuff. Good stuff. Mm. On to another thing from the past. It's Brand New Animal, episode 6. What was this episode title called?
Fox Waltz.
Fox Waltz, indeed.
The same animal that appears, and then it's one more word.
This is the second episode written by Nanami Higuchi of Beastars. As was episode 4. And last week's... I've got to look it up. I should have thought that it was one of hers. It was a Kimiku Ueno episode. And yeah. The next one of hers is episode 9, so I assume that will be another comedy heavy one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just, I guess it seems to like these serious ones where Michu is kind of having heart-to-hearts with friends. Unlike the last case, though, it's much more... kind of saddening end because she reunited with her best friend, but she's sort of being caught up in this religious cult in the meantime, and she's changed, man. She's not who she used to be.
I was wondering if to use the gay or trans or whatever metaphor, like, was it going to do the thing of someone who's accepted changing and someone who hasn't, but it's more so like that your friends have changed from the person that you remember them as, that kind of thing. It's not so much if you've grown apart, it's just like they're, or maybe that they had that kind of shittiness in them all the time, and it's just gotten worse.
I think it's that trope of the teenage girl who thinks she's using the older man when it's actually the older man using her. And that was the point at which I went, okay, which one of the writers is writing this episode? And then I saw that it was Nanami Higuchi, and I was like, okay, I'm much more or less concerned about where this episode's going.
Right, yeah.
Than I was before. Because that's the thing, yeah, she wants to be an idol, and in the episode she thinks she's being an idol, and she's
being idolized.
She wants to do it on her own terms. So she thinks that what she's doing is on her own terms, though from the outside, as the viewer, we can see, oh no, clearly that the head of this cult who's using her to pretend to be the silver wolf, is clearly a bad un.
Yeah, there's the kind of, this kind of how do beastmen approach religion, and we're like, well, we have this thing with this, like, this mythical figure, the silver wolf, and all through the ages there have been times when beastmen have lived alongside human beings, but the relations would regularly turn sour, but a silver wolf would arrive and I'd be the savior of our people and then lead us to safety. And naturally, Shiro thinks that's a whole bullshit. Everybody's just trying to save themselves. What am I up there? How did it wind up going downtown then to the slums?
Selling dodgy water purifiers for the milk.
That's it. Oh, yeah.
The one was explaining her backstory of her friend that she misses to him, but he wandered off in the middle of it, and your one charged her for her phone thing, so he has to sell dodgy Henry Hoover water purifiers.
Yeah.
Jason was just a bucket with a spout, honestly. I'm guessing that's what it is.
And I could never think of Henry Hoover now without thinking of the Alex Horn. The horn section bit with the member of the band who sings as Henry Hoover with a Henry Hoover on his head. But yeah, Jackie has bought one previously and she's in trouble because she didn't realize shopping was so much fun and cannot afford to keep up the payments on her water purifier. And so a hippo and his henchmen have come to town to burn her to death, so people know what happens if you miss a single payment.
Were the people in the slums
payment.
About to attack them?
Yes.
Or what was the,
they were about,
I figured that was going to happen, because they did seem like everyone beasted out, and I was like, oh, that generally means they're going to rumble, right?
Yes. And then the wolf cult shows up, and sort of puts things to rest, but really do not save Jackie at all. That is Michiru doing that off screen while everyone's distracted by the arrival of the cult.
Yeah, I mean, like they've come there to stop them, but one's still being burned to the stake. So they're not.
Yes.
They're saying they're going to make changes, but they're not practically doing the changes, which is what Michiru is doing, which is
the fact Jackie is commenting on what the smell of her own burning flesh smells like.
Mm-hmm, delicious.
Not a very smart bear, no.
Yeah. No.
But your aim is to just turn up. Did you see her, what she did? She turned into a full morph into a giant silver wolf. That's badass.
Mm.
We are your gods now.
Mm.
And yeah, then they capture Michiru because Michiru wants to speak to the wolf and seems to be calling her by a different name to the one they're using. So they tie her up and take her down an alleyway.
Tie her up in a carpet and gag her.
But then the wolf wants to speak to her, and yes, it is her old friend, and they hang out. But Shiro won't let her stay at the co-op with Michiru.
Hmm.
And then she doesn't trick Michiru into getting her to see the mayor.
She manipulates.
Yeah.
Doesn't directly ask anything, but just sort of like lays in a fucking rope to hang herself kind of thing.
Yeah, and we're getting all these little clues about their past, and like Michiru had pushed her out of the way of a lorry which was about to hit her and broke her leg for her trouble. And then they get into the arguments about how you're always trying to, she's like claiming, what's her name? The fox girl?
Nazuna.
Yeah, claiming that Michiru is always trying to help people because it makes her feel good.
Yeah, as in, like, you're not doing anything, you're not doing good things because it's the right thing to do. You're doing it because, like, you think you're so fucking great. You think you're so great. Oh, I can get you a meeting with the mayor. La, do you fucking die? And it was long, like, no, dude, you're my friend, and I know the mayor, so I can make that happen.
But it also feels a bit like a mirror of conversations Michiru's had with Shiro in earlier episodes. So I think you're like, it's trying to make you think, oh, Michiru is a little bit more like Shiro than she would claim to be.
She's definitely more in the same line, like selfless, like him. So
But she's always been complaining about Shiro like taking his time or helping in the first place because she could have rescued herself. So it's all these little things to like, maybe they're not so different after all. These two. And obviously, it's quite clear who the Silver Wolf really is at this point.
Yeah.
So, okay, like, just background thing. It's like, all throughout human history, sometimes beastmen and humans get along, but when shit goes sour, the Silver Wolf shows up and sorts everything out, and he's, like, apparently thousands of years old, and so, like, I don't know, like, like a character that lives for ages, like Wolverine or something, for example. I don't know, off the top of my head.
Yeah. seen a guy jump up a building and he's comes away with nothing but a little like bump on the head. He could be, have been alive for millennia. Just for every reason doesn't remember about it.
Yes. And we've had characters literally think he was as well.
For a second. It's like, wait, is that? Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, Michu has sensed it as well, the presence before.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're letting the religion in to the city. I guess ostensibly because it will help keep the peace, but obviously the mayor wants to spy on them. It's easy to keep an eye on them if they're in the city than if they're sneaking around.
They're going to keep pushing in their thing, so it's like, yeah, we might as well get them in officially, get them fucking on the books, and at least it'll be, they won't be trying to convert people on the sly.
Anything else to note? There's a lot of the action's all near the start, and then there's a lot of conversational stuff towards the end.
Yeah. I think the other stuff is background. If they were infected with Beastmen disease or changed or whatever, it's probably while they were in hospital together.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that they're both been changed into animals that are known for transforming.
Yeah, as well.
And not just a fox, but a kitsune, that kind of thing.
I think even the kitsune doesn't that have more kind of negative connotations as well.
A tanuki is just like a trickster, whereas a kitsune is like a... the kind of thing leading kids away, like the fairies kind
sort of
thing.
You have to call Kitaro in for. the other thing I liked is the way the Silver Wolf story is told is by this children's book that Jem's been
that's
working
lovely.
On. Mm. And that's an imitation of a particular artist's style, and I forgot the name of the woman whose style it is.
It looked really familiar. I was hoping you'd know. But I did like that, and the way it was presented, even in thing, it was like, "Hey, did you draw this?" It's like, "This is how I'm gonna make my money." It says the chicken whose wife has given out that he's showering with feathers again. It's like, yes. Feathers clogging up the drain. Which is really good. Like, just it's nice to have a bit of like Beastman specific home life, but not too different from my own, honestly.
Well, you shouldn't change it into your bird form.
It's the hair. It's the hair. It's too much hair.
It's more of his turned into his Sasquatch form. It's so relaxed in the shower, though.
Okay, moving on, because I don't want to linger too long on any of these things, otherwise I'll just be a pool of water by the end of this. Extra Olympia Kyklos, episode 11, different country, different face. In which the Spartans discuss how wonderful it was to grow up a Spartan.
Remember the good old days when you wouldn't be fed, you'd be starved, and the only way to survive was to steal food. And if you were caught, you'd be beaten. Not because you were stealing, because you got caught. Weren't those fantastic days, lads? Yeah.
When I was young, they used to throw us off a cliff at 1 year old. And if you died, you're dead, and if you survived, you get to steal for a living. It's brilliant.
Yes, it's a parody of. I think specifically, it's a parody of Japanese, whatever generation had to go through like the Spartan education system and sports training.
Right.
I'm sure there's plenty of them who say kids these days have it too soft, but it still works as a general parody of like any. Previous generation who complains that the current generation have it too soft.
Yeah. I had a religious guy come door to door to me one stage where he was trying to, he apparently lived through the Blitz and shit. And I was like, well, surely you'd say now is better than then because they're not dropping bombs on us. You know, I couldn't get through to him though.
this conversation starts when they're asking what events they're going to have at their Olympia. And they explain, it'll be foot races and all these things. Now, why didn't you have a good, terrible sports? You should have some Spartan sports, such as making starving children fight over cheese.
While you whip them.
Cut to an animated version of a specific historical vase.
Oh, dear.
And then you get a recipe Because yes. The Spartans are insulted when they're brought nice food by the mayor.
How fucking dare you? Trying to make us fat, you bastard.
We'll enjoy some Spartan black soup.
Mm-hmm. And I like the way he talks it through it, like a cooking show on the little talking head in the corner. Yes. I was like, that was really fun.
Let's add a little salt to the vinegar. No, the vinegar will help the pig's blood stop from coagulating. So this is whatever much you need there to taste. Then just leave in just your pig's trotters and just let it simmer on that until the color changes and you're good to go. Enjoy.
And then you get that historical quote of, I now know why Spartans don't fear death. and then masses of plasticine vomit.
Oh, rainbows of colors when you smush all different bits together.
Mm.
And you either get a cool rainbow effect or all just like turns into the same sort of weird purple.
Purpley brown, yeah.
Hey, when someone did that like, in play school, it's like I come in, oh, I'm playing with some plastic with some marla, and it's like, oh, who did that? Why have a go with this? No, I can't make nothing out of it.
You can make purple things.
And you also get the skull cutaways when they eat it, including the dolphins.
Yeah.
That was nice. Yeah.
Why did a dolphin eat it as well? You know, I've just seen what happened to the last couple of people.
I mean, like, dolphins literally eat, like, you know, raw fish and shit. So I was like, oh, he can probably take it. It's like, no, it's super gross. Like, a few of the ingredients, I was like, well, that'd be all right. But the main ingredients are pig's feet and pig's blood. So probably not. No, thanks.
Yeah. I do like the fact they don't pretend that it would be nice, that it would. It's just this well known, horrible dish. that the Spartans used to eat.
Again, well, a joke that would literally work back then.
Yes.
They put hair in your chest and on your shins.
And then we get another song about Spartans, this time explaining like how they don't care about all these various things when they're in their own country. But when they're in somebody else's country, suddenly their morals are completely flipped on their heads.
That's really funny, and I feel like that's true to life of a lot of people anyway.
Yeah,
well, when they go on holiday, they're a little different.
God, speak English, damn it! Like it goes, your way is the right way, and anyone who's not doing it your way must be obviously wrong. There's no other different way it could possibly be accomplished, right?
Specifically, here is they don't care for money in their own country, but when there is somebody else's country, they will take your money.
They're mad about money. Ooh, give me that money. Dear.
I don't know how many episodes this is due to have, whether next week's is the last one or we've got more to come.
God, I hope we've more, because I'll miss it when it's gone. I really will.
Yeah,
I
think the one line of Demetrius saying, I'm glad I wasn't born a Spartan. It's like, that's the most relatable line, I think, of the week.
Yeah.
Can't be cooling down with some pig's blood soup. Not in this weather.
Then we've got God of High School, episode 5. God, I should have figured out how to pronounce that
one.
Ronde / Hound.
Hmm.
In which a whole lot of fighting happens with different emotions behind it at different points in the episode.
Yeah, This is an example of what it does really well, because you know the premise is very simplistic, but this is... the main thrust of what it's really about and what it wants to do is have a rad fight, but like they're putting their emotions into their fists and just I'm going to punch my feelings into you.
Yeah.
Or allow you to punch me and then that'll take my feelings or my feelings. Because there's this whole like inner dialogue going on, mostly on Han's side, about why the hell he beat the living daylights out of Mira in the last round.
Yeah, I think also part of it was like, oh, this entire episode is fighting, pretty much. So it's like, how can we make that not repetitive? Which they do a cracking job of. We get Han's background as a delinquent and his friendship with his dying friend. And we discover that his friend is literally dying as the fight's going on. And his motivations are that... if he wins the semi-final and the final here in the preliminary, then they'll use the nanomachines to try and cure his friend. In fact, they've already started using the nanomachines during the final. Mm-hmm. So the guy who looks like the devil can't be entirely bad.
You say that, but he does like show up during the fight to go like, hey,
yes.
We already started your friends on the treatment, but he did. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, you get back to the fight. I'll be back.
Well, he wanted to egg on Jin, wanted to egg on Han because I want you to be representative. I want you to win the final. I don't want Jin Mori to do it. So wherever you need, whoever will motivate you to do so, what is it? Cure your friend, no problem. Beat the crap out of him. We'll sort it out. He's kind of what's it now? Okay, just fighting away and then like Mira shows up and she says, "Sir, hey, it's me. I'm okay. I'm fine. They got great hospitals here in nano machines. There was like an awful kind of awful scrap we had last time, but I'm here. I'm upright and I'm okay. I also have got a letter from a friend of yours. You should probably read."
There was a few nice touches with that. Like she's kind of kicking herself, was like, "Oh, I didn't know I was supposed to come to the hospital
they told her off
outside of the thing." Because obviously, in the last one, you meant punched her right in her sword wound.
Yeah.
Sword inflicted wound, and she was like, "Whoops, bad." But then during the fight, he pulls the same move on your man, and then your man hits him back in the same like a kidney shot, basically. And it was just like, it's nice to give like that move, like just that hitting them fucking there, just like, "Oh fuck, you're gonna hit me dirty like that, I'm gonna hit you dirty like that back." Yeah, kind of thing.
He's also kind of the same point, like this is why I'm here, this is why I'm mad at you. I'm not gonna say it in words, I'm gonna dig it in.
It visually represents it through the fighting, which is excellent.
Yeah, and at the start of the episode, he's like, I don't have no friends, and then you learn that his sick mate wanted him to have more friends, not just him. And but he thought he'd never have any more friends, so he would joke with him. And then the finale, when he's visiting his memorial, he sticks a note saying, "Ha, it's just you. I've got new friends now. Got these two."
It seems like a real jerk thing. I feel like that picture is going to be taken down. It was like, "I have friends now, lol." It's like, motherfucker, we're throwing that shit off the memorial. But his friend would have found it funny. So,
but the funniest bit, though, is the cousin guiding them through the hospital, carrying all the books and boxes and bags to the point where she can't see where she's going, and he's constantly going in the wrong direction.
It's like, "Don't worry, sister, I'll take care of you." He's like, "You can't see where you're going. She needs to be directed by the sister or by doctors, or you know."
Yes, but that's how they end up. That's how she ends up at the ICU to get the note in the first place. So. Because she, as she gets close enough, the detector thing says, "Oh, there's somebody else with nano machines nearby,
and zero hit points." Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
So they had been administering the treatment while the fight was going on, but it was too little, too late. It didn't have a chance to take effect, and so basically, Han's pal just wrote down his last words, his last kind of little written testament to him, and that's what's kind of delivered to him in the fight because. He's been going hell for leather against Jin, but he's used like all his best moves. He's brought out the Azure Dragon, the final blow that we didn't see earlier on. But Jin's still gone. He's kind of more than, "Oh, can I kind of fucking do this? Like, what am I doing this for?" But then he gets the letter, and it sort of tells him, basically that's saying to him, like, "Man, I'm okay. Like, you know, you did the best for me. You're fighting for like me all this time." But it's not going to go away. But you don't need to do this for me anymore. You should, if whatever you want to do, do it for yourself. Do it for the friends you're going to have. And then the cat gives him the upper spell. "I'm going to take on Jin now, and one to one, do it properly. This is about us now and what we have." And he feels that if I have no kind of regrets, or I have no kind of like lingering like attachments or regrets about this, I'll be able to accept my defeat. Like once I've tried everything I could. I did everything I could to save my friend, and it didn't work. And now, if I haven't got that regret, I can just take my defeat like a man.
And the idea that you can, instead of like fighting to get someone else to survive, you can fight for what you're looking for. And when he hands her back the letter and says, like, "Hey, hang on to this for me," like, don't tell him yet because he'll probably feel sorry for him and he won't fight properly, kind of thing. But it changes the tone of the fight. And Yuan doesn't need to be told. He just kind of feels it from the flow of it. It's less about this desperate thing of, "I am angrily fighting you with no with no holding back, like cruelly fighting, to just two people trying to challenge each other and trying to push each other to the limit, which is more so what the fun loving character has been about up to this point. So he can kind of feel it in the flow of the fight and he starts smiling and enjoying it. Really, really nice that they can do that through, like you said, Niall, express that kind of emotional change through the fight.
Yeah, it sort of choreographs or kind of sets like up the pace of it, because you have this push and pull between the two lads, versus underscored by this. And as this mental state changes, it's reflected then in the direction that the fight is going. Like if every good fight should be about a good sort of push and pull like that, but they've like really backed that up and elaborated on that with the powerful emotions running underneath the surface. Yeah, it was just good, just like just telling this story with two guys trading blows. There's more to it. It get a cool fight, but there's also just many more layers to it than just that.
It changes from like a fight that's about personal stakes and desperation, and I mean, like a fight is about violence, but about like sort of more so angry violence, to one that's about personal stakes in that you feel like a joy through fighting and pushing yourself and getting to like a new thing where your man's like making up like a move based on the dragon move used on him using his own style. And I was just like, yeah, that's what it's about. Like, you know, changing is improving yourself as a person.
Yeah, there's loads of cool shit in it. I loved like early on, the early exchanges, you get like these alternate first person views of them when throwing digs at each other and the guy blocking it or dodging it.
That was really nice.
Lovely little touches out there.
That final move is far, far more powerful than anything we saw in the rest of the fight as well.
Secret ingredient is love.
We've already seen there's straight up fucking stands or whatever, but the superpowers are seeping their way into the regular fight, which is nice.
Yeah, and as they're naming all the Black Tortoise and the Azure Dragon, I was like, blimey, I've seen that constantly playing these Yakuza games, particularly 4, when every single person learns each of those stances. I will say, the one thing I do about Yakuza 4 is after you played the first three characters, then you get Kiryu, and Kiryu has most of his skills already filled in because he's Kiryu.
Oh, that's nice. So it feels good. It's just like, oh, you don't have to work from scratch. It's like, no, this guy's already badass.
Yeah, thank God. I already have like the improved evade dash, because I have to edit it. That's always so far in. It's like, oh, I need that now. Give it to me.
Then to the point where you're like, okay, I wonder what crazy things he's going to learn past this then.
You know, like all the finishers, he's going to like summon a bicycle, smash it over his head.
Next on the list is Fruit Basket, episode 18. Do you want a kiss?
Well, I'm flattered, but I'm spoken for. Thank you.
Not on the podcast.
Dwayne, do you want a kiss? All joking aside, this is definitely is the fucking darkest backstory we've had for the Zodiac members.
It's saying something. It sounds like you're being hyperbolic, but yeah, I think you're fucking right. Jesus, fuck.
So this is focusing on Rin, the horse who we've encountered before, very standoffish. Had a thing going on, Hatsuharu. It probably still is going on, because she's keeping something to herself. She's doing this for someone else's sake. And she's also trying to seek a way to break the Zodiac curse. So that's what her little illicit meeting she's been having with Shigure and have been about. And it throws in like back then in a whole new light. You think there's something completely immoral and lewd and dirty going on, but she's just see the same as somebody who's tried before, and she's just trying to pump for information. But what do you know? It's got to be some way to break this. Particular is sort of despondent about it. It's like, I've tried, I've looked, but I can't find anything. You think because I'm so close to Akito, I know all the secrets, but I don't. Like that one, I have no clue. And I've tried, and I really want to get out of this, but I just can't. I'm just tired of it now. So the only thing I can really do is just stir shit up. It kind of just leaves it to Rin, like, you know, I'll just let the people who actually care about this anymore. Do the dirty work, and I'll profit off your hard work. Don't be looking up to me as someone to be admired or revered.
The kind of idea is like, hey, I'm not going to save you. You young people are probably going to save the whole fucking situation, and when that happens, it'll sort me out. So good luck. Which is like, yeah, it seems like the dick kind of version of him, but it seems like him throwing off the stuff. It was kind of interesting to get a lot more Rin in this, because besides obviously caring about her ex, she seemed really cold, but like it kind of like puts into perspective everything she's been doing and why she's been acting that way.
Yeah, she's not feeling very well. She's just either not eating, or she's just completely exhausted, and she's just kind of going around in a delirious state almost. Passes by Hiro and Kisa, and Hiro's man was there as well. They're talking about, oh, like, who you got, like, a baby brother or sister on the way. Shut up. My mom is so dumb. She's going to fall over and just going to hurt herself. So here she comes now. Oh, mom, you're so embarrassing. And then, like, Hiro catches Rin and says, hey, how's it going? You look so good. It's like, no, leave me alone. Well, you just stay there with your happy family. You love so much. It says, just because you were there at that time doesn't mean we got a whole, like, connection going on. You stay away from me. Rin is stumbling around, and she's trying to go back to Shigure's house, but she just kind of fucking collapses as she gets in the front door. And then she's looking around. She can't know where she's, what's going on, who, what's happening. And she's a figure in the doorway. It's like, what's that? And it's just Toru. And she's obviously wondering, right, who the hell, Rhea, is Rin? Are you all right? But she starts flashing back to traumatic images from her past of her parents standing in the doorway. And we just delve right down into that. She's, God. So, outwardly, it seemed like, oh, this is the perfect little household. And, oh, he's got a mammy and a daddy, and they have a beautiful daughter, and it's going to be so nice, and we're going to be a perfect, happy family. But,
and basically, like, the kid at dinner at one stage is like, hey, mom, dad, how come you're always, like, happy? Are you never sad or anything? You know, just, like, a simple enough kid question. It's like, you guys always seem like you're super happy. Are you never sad?
And it's slip out.
They're kind of like, motherfucker, we were fucking putting up with you all this fucking time, and they like just kind of freak out in her. And I thought it was kind of a nice visual where she's kind of kicked out of the room, and then she thinks she's going to get a pat in the head when the dad opens the door, and he just grabs her by a handful of hair. It was just nasty fucking stuff.
It's really fun, harrowing shit
for like a little kid. Like, that sucks.
Yeah. And it wasn't just that one incident, it seems, because you get the sense this is this ongoing fucking ordeal she was going through. And she's going up out and going to school. She gets friendly with Haru, then, you know, this is back when they're younger kids. Because he's just kind of, you know, he's a bit of a dope, but he's nice like that. And he's will actually kind of talk to her and play with her and things. But she just fucking like collapses in the fun playground. She's brought to the hospital then. And there's Kazuma again, being the best dad. He's being the man there, and just always best Soma, always on hand to help people out. And just talking to Rivage at the hospital.
We had to call in your parents for the other injuries that we had to treat. And she's like, oh no, don't do it. I'm sorry. I didn't want to get him in trouble. It's my fault. And it's like, wait, her parents, and without saying it, like, her parents have obviously been beating her in the background because she had so many injuries, she fucking collapsed as a small child. I'm just like, Jesus, fuck. And at that stage, when the parents are called in, they're kind of disgusted with the sight of her, and they're basically disowning her in the hospital. Just nasty fucking shit all around. But at that stage, Haru actually stops being the kind of placid cow and starts being the angry bull. And, starts like giving out stink to them. It's like, she's your kid, what the fuck is wrong with you, kind of thing. And he's only held in check by best dad there, which is probably good, because he's a kid, he couldn't have done much.
Parents just disown her. Don't care, they're gonna have her house, you know, we're done taking care of you. That's how the arrangement works. She was living at Kagura's family's house then. But she was just still just fucking
the reminder of, like, you see, like, this daughter and the family that loves her and stuff, and even though they're not, it's not a front like it was with her, the fact that it's like a real thing is kind of like, it still brings up to the fake front that she was brought up with, and the fact that she never had this.
Yeah, I mean, she's so constricted and feels so fucking stressed and anxious about the whole thing that she feels physically sick. And she's probably conflating that in her head with the internal injuries that she's fucking sustained. So sort of not being the daughter that they want, or feeling like, you know, that she's displeasing her parents somehow, like, physically makes her sick.
Yeah, yeah. It's a considerable fucking amount of trauma that's manifesting like physically. It's so fucking bad. So yeah.
But the bright spot in her life is that Haru was always there, and he wouldn't be too pushy about things. You know, he'd just be his easygoing self. And then, you know, they meet each other. They're playing in the playground together. Then they're going to separate schools, meet after school, and they chat about stuff. And then they're going to cafes together. And then, you know, obviously it's getting closer and closer.
Mm-hmm.
And Haru says straight out in his dumbass but straightforward way, "Hey, man, you want a kiss?" He's like, "Well, no, we couldn't. No, please, no. Akito would—he'd have a fit if I was saying, but like, no, man, let's just do it. No fun."
It's kind of like very just plain, simple thinking of like, it's like, well, it's not like I'm going to kiss anyone else. It's not like I love anyone more than you, right? And she's just like, yeah, well, yeah, I love you, but it's like, oh shit, I've admitted it. Didn't want to admit I could do that to another person. Kind of messed up from that now. And wouldn't you fucking know it? Akito gets fucking wind of it.
Yeah, from someone snitched. And,
yeah, could be.
Akito just fucking starts savaging her. And like, who said you could do that with one of my belongings? Haru belongs to me. You belong to me. I don't even value you that much. You're completely worthless. You're just a placeholder in the Zodiac. I have no fucking real value for you. And she is just, Rin is terrified as well.
Akio says to heart, like, that seems to be the thing about
it. Never really seen her like this as well. We've been used to sort of the very severe version of her, but this is her. She's absolutely terrified. And then that just makes Akio this sadistic bastard just like reveling in so much more really ugly, ugly scenes there. And to cap it off, then, he pushes her out of a second story window.
And this is where our sheep kid sees her getting pushed out, and he couldn't do anything to stop it. So obviously he's still blaming himself for that a bit. Not that he could have done anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's just lying down, bleeding out. That's where obviously the scar on her shoulder comes from. Mm-hmm. Hitting the big fucking rock in the garden. And she's bleeding out, just kind of like not, just out of it. It's pretty rough.
Yeah, that's what we saw in hospital when she was first introduced in the series. Yeah. And it wasn't from that, and that's when I got to break it off with Haru, because if Akira would push me out a window, you could probably do the same, if not worse, to Haru, and I can't bring that down on his head. That's why she's doing it, man. She's a good cop, but she's too far into this persona. It's fucking just like really harrowing, really intense stuff. That secret at the end where she's slow motion was falling down, you know, and just fun contemplating what led to this point and the way she feels about it. I felt like fun. There's nobody, my parents didn't want me, but nobody fun wanted me at all. Akito doesn't want me. So literally fun throwing me out a fucking window away from himself. But the only person fun wanted me, somebody wanted me around was Haru. And I want him to be free of this. He deserves it. I want to be like, I don't want this to happen to him. I want to be away from all of this. And that's what sets her on the path. And I want him most of all to be free of this curse.
Again, being hurting yourself to try and be selfless, even if it's pointless. Like, I know the way the show is going, that it's going to also get into Akito and shit, but it's like, and kind of go like, oh, don't you feel sympathy as well? And it's like, but the amount of shit you pulled, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's so.
I'm not very a forgiving person, though. So I guess this is my feeling.
Yeah, we're kind of contrasting it with what her parents did with her as well. It's like Akito is just yet another abusive parental figure that just like has no worth in her. It also as well, because you think when the position Akito holds in the Zodiac, it's like God exists and he hates you.
Yeah, and obviously, like, without talking about magic turning into animals and stuff, it is a lot of it, because it's talking about specifically abuse, it's about the kind of cycles of abuse and how that gets passed down between people.
Yeah, it's really, I think, trying to convey to you more that the curse, you know, I talk about, you know, isn't just really when you embrace someone the opposite gender, then they do transform into YAML. The Duodec is, that's just a kind of a cute little funny thing. The real curse that you'd be living under is just this environment, this oppressive atmosphere, this fucking cycle of trauma and torment of abuse that just endemic in this family. This seems to be exacerbated or brought out by the strange nature of how some of the family members were born, and then they're standing within this fucking weird made up hierarchy they have in their family. It's just really messed up. The fucking visuals in this as well do a really good job at that too, because this is very unsettling, distorted screens going up, and then some very jarring cuts. Particularly, as Raina's going under into her flashback, it's just like, this is really putting you on edge. It was a good bit of kind of quasi hackneyed. Oh, it's the doll, but then the doll is thrown to the floor and the arm is falling off.
Yeah, there's some stuff like that, and there's some kind of artful shots, but overall it works quite well for it, yeah.
I mean, that sounds very tragic, but is it as tragic as being served the flesh of your own kind for lunch?
That's pretty fucked up.
It's overrated, I know. I think human flesh, you know, it's... you mean Wacky TV 999 number 17?
I do. Order in, popular lunch delivery. In which the monkey AD, I assume, is from the first season. Is back when they order in. They order something from Nuba Eats, which they have to use one of the pigeons to order it because they don't have any mobile phones. And this monkey AD shows up as a Nuba Eats delivery boy, and he's brought them the meal, but they need to pay for it, and they're going to take digital payments. Well, there is an alternative. If you get the pigeon to give me the money, then it's fine.
We do take pigeon payment.
Yeah.
I can really fucking relate to that, because I have the money. Like, you know, I can walk into this place and just give you the money, right? What's wrong with that? No. You got to book an appointment through Appso, the new application we have just for fucking booking things. Okay, what does that do? Well, basically, it takes like your number and the time of day you want to come by, and you come by. Yeah, couldn't I do that by just calling you? No. This is more efficient this way. It's an app. You can get it on your phone. Yeah, I can call you on my phone. And just do this exact same thing without this middleman. Why are we doing this? Just want a data, man. Just leave us alone.
And it turns out in the end that the food which has been delivered is a banana variety platter.
Yeah, so you get some fried plantain and some just chopped up bananas or a banana dessert or something. And it's just like... He's like, I can't fucking eat this. I've already fucking paid for it, but I'm not going to eat this. And the monkey's like, oh, do you mind if I like have a bit? I'm fucking starving.
It's fucked up, man. Don't do that in front of me.
Dear.
And then he just starts biting his arm while he's turned in the opposite direction.
Hey, dude, don't take a bite out of me. And he's like, oh, sorry. It's like, don't just spit it fucking out. It's my arm. Dear. Unresolved, not resolved. Are they going to get lunch? I don't fucking know.
To be continued.
Yes.
On a cliffhanger.
The show.
Then it is Decadence, episode 5, Differential Gear.
That's it.
And this is what it says on the website. The stage is set for a tragedy. Natsumi sorties alongside the power. But the squadron does not stand a chance against a cheat-level Gadol. When all hope seems lost, Kaburagi appears.
And then some.
And then some. Yeah, so they're fighting a fog Gadol, which is generating fog, which is making it difficult for everybody to fight. Also appears to be to cover up the fact that there isn't actually a parent, like the mother of all the Gadols here. Because it turns out...
That's DLC coming soon.
I was thinking like a PS2 Silent Hill, where the reason for the fog was because it could only render like so much detail of the distance. And the fog is like just the thing to get rid of that. And I was just like, oh, because you actually haven't rendered the fucking final boss yet. That's pretty cool.
The one of the siblings who'd been a little bit brusque to Nasumi dies.
Yeah, and even was in the car. It's like, come on, kid, this isn't going to be a playground kind of thing. It's like, yeah, but they're not shitty to her. It's just like, yeah, I appreciate the fact that you also put your life on the line, and you know, I was just like, oh, that's cool. At least she got to go out like a fucking badass.
Well, I think she's still alive.
I don't know about that, man.
I don't know about
one of the three is alive. Two of the three are alive, but the muscly woman, I'm not sure she survived.
I don't know. She was still breathing after she closed her eyes. I think she's going to be horribly injured.
It wasn't like one slash. It was like all the slashes through her body. It was just like, yeah. it doesn't look good.
But yeah, it was pre-staged. I expected, this is going to like come back and her after her arm gun went off in the last episode. But she's actually all right about it. She's like, no, I know you did. No, I can't bear to see like kids like you get chewed up on the battlefield. Not anymore. Ugh.
And then Kaburagi shows up and saves them, and then we get like 1 hour earlier because he's like, it's a hopeless fight, let's just leave. And he's like, but she's like, what about the other two there? And we basically get confirmation that the Gadols are also part of the system. We meet Sully and Sunny, two Gadol developers, I guess.
Yeah,
they have to patch through something that's not fucking finished.
Because Kaburagi manages to kill the cheat Gadol, the one who can't be beaten because it can just heal itself.
Because your one, like when she went in and fought it, like with new resolve after your one dying, she does really fucking good. But then it like pulls the spear out, like it seems really intelligent, and the wound closes, and I'm like, hang on a sec, that's fucking cheap.
It's funny. It's some kind of PvP combat here. Right? I was half wondering, was it possibly somebody on your end controlling it, which is why it's so intelligent.
Because I mean, like you can control the human body, so why not the Gadol as well? And to make it super cheap, that'd be a good way to do it. So yeah, the Kaburagi shuts it down by just like stabbing it like so many fucking times in the head.
Well, yeah. And also, he removes his limiter.
Yes, he does that as well. Mm. Mm. Because that, I like the way, like, when she kind of runs back in to save the other guys, she's talking about, I did this to, like, push myself past my limits, and he's remembering that guy who died, and he's like, oh, shit. Yeah, they're putting themselves on the line here, and so he does the same in order to save her and get them out of there.
But then that causes the Stargate Gadol to appear, who isn't finished, which...
It's like, just push it through. It's not supposed to happen. Just push through the big boss.
Wasn't supposed to appear at all. The story's broken. Yeah.
At the end, you know, they were meant to be that fall Gadol eventually, but not at that point. You know, and that would trigger like, oh, this is like the new event. Ooh, this is what you're fighting now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess the plan was. DLC. Yeah, I guess the fog Gadol would like decimate the forces and force them to retreat. Then they do their new season event where the returning heroes would reappear.
And then they take on this big boss when it was finished.
Level 70 character or above.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, they managed to defeat it between the Kaburagi and I forget the guy who's the captain. We also learned that all of the other crew are also little robots.
That's pretty fun as well, because he's there. It's like, this isn't supposed to go down like this. It's like, if we actually got hit by that, we'd be fucking lost. It's like,
because one of the crew is like, why can't we just ask them to stop it? Just switch it off.
It's like, no, we're going out live.
What my amazing climax to this special event we have having in Decadence.
Ooh. So, like, you have those guys who are behind the scenes, and there's like two people they're trying to trick. One, the fucking humans, and two, the little robot guys who are watching it, thinking it's like a live event where anything can happen. But it's like, no, it's a scripted fucking DLC story kind of thing. So don't worry about it. But then the story goes off the rails, and they're like, oh shit! They have to keep the lie up to both sides now.
Yep. Just do the piston punch thing. They love that. They'll send them wild. Just do that thing again.
Yeah. Because this thing is, it can shoot its own liquid at you like at super high pressure, but it seems to be like disintegrating as it's doing that. It's like it's not finished.
It's very curious that it's called Stargate as well.
Like, like the DLC was going to be set in... I mean, like, they already fight in zero-G, so for the next, like, levels to be set in space, I was just like, that'll make sense.
Yeah. Cabaret, like, knocks out the leg. Wasn't quite done. It was kind of weedy, and that gives them an opportunity to punch it, and the entire mountain behind it. And it's like, oh, it's exposed to this, but there's nothing in there. So that didn't just cap it. That was the final victory. We've done it. All of the tankers, all of the actual human cards.
Standing on Mount Everest going like, wow, it's a day that we finally live without Geralt. Wait, what the fuck? Why is the sky rising in?
Fog of war drops, and then, oh, there are new worlds out there with even bigger monsters. It's like, oh, what the fuck? And then the gears, like the front players are like, oh, right, yeah, we're going to be new levels coming, worlds coming soon. Can't wait to start playing around in those. But Natsume is ashen face. He says, what the fuck?
And then flashes back to what Kaburagi and Ward are about, that the war is never over. And Kaburagi basically says, look after your dog. I'm off.
And she kind of looked around and he was like, he was gone. And I was like, oh, was he de-rezzed? And no, he just walked the fuck away.
Yes. And meets up with your fella who's a wall in their world.
In his avatar, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, and he wants him to say the world doesn't need bugs, but he says the world needs bugs, and so Kaburagi dies. End of series. No, I'm sure he'll be back next week.
Well, I mean, like, all he did was kill his avatar. So
yes, yeah, in the preview. That's the other thing, man. In the preview on the YouTube channel, that crazy-looking, old-looking, beat-up one is in it next week. I noticed in the opening, he's with the guys who were decommissioned, the rankers who were decommissioned earlier in the series.
Mm.
And also that other one who we've not met yet, the lady robot.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting another level next week. Another planet with level of like, here's something else you're not aware of.
Kind of fucking close to Red Dead. I figure it's going to be buggy as shit, as a person watching it rather than playing it, I think I'm going to enjoy it more.
That is exactly what this episode reminded me of, particularly today.
It's like,
and this
that's
week.
Not supposed to happen. dear.
Yeah. Not class as well.
Sure.
Good to see the giant piston punch animation again. But there's some cool stuff going on with her fighting monsters of various sizes.
Yeah, this feels like, in terms of the keeping up the standard, this is like listeners was last season, in just consistent throughout.
Yeah, I was reading up on some of the history, more so how like the Nut Studio came together and all that, and they wanted doing this for a good couple of years, I think 4 or 5 years, but the problem was that everybody involved in this was doing too well and doing too good on other products. So I had to wait until you're being too successful. We gotta wait until get all your dudes in together. And I think there's this coalesce into this amazing whole. And it's even bringing in like the different schools, how they could have such an art design style for the quote unquote real world, and then the art design for the cyborg robot world, and how they just like can mix and meld together so well. Just really cool stuff.
Righty ho. Then we've got a Paran Man, episode 6. I am Gil. Except by the end of this, I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not Gil. And then I saw what the next episode's called, and I was like, okay, excellent. That is exactly what you wanted me to think. So this episode is a lot of basically giving you an idea of what a lot of the racers are like in their approach to racing. So you've got a Paré is constantly beautiful minding it and calculating shortcuts.
No, that was class when we're trying to dodge the oncoming train. We get the Doctor Stone calculating like 3 seconds the angle, the or the force you need to apply at this point to bypass the train.
I was just thinking like Mario Kart 64, where you're just like, okay, can I go full pelt to this train and I'll just fucking make it?
Yeah, that's TJ and Dylan.
yeah. That's their method, which yeah, worked out for him. So,
and Al's playing it safe because he doesn't want to. He doesn't want to risk the vehicle. He worries about it for a bit, and then realizes he's got to play by his on his terms and do it as he wants. Mm. And yeah, chasing Gil and Dick Dastardly and Muttley. They are so disgustedly,
yeah, and I love the fact they just went straight up. It's like, hee-hee, we're going to sneak ahead and do all. And I was just like, fucking A, excellent, yeah, love it.
They're going to block in the Valley of Despair with dynamite, and then the henchmen are like, why don't we just kill everybody? And then like Chase is like, yeah, but then they'll cancel the race. We need the race to actually take part. They're going to
kill a few of them.
Well, no, they was like, if somebody dies, it doesn't matter. But then later on, when they appear to be wanting to kill, is it Hototoe? Is that the kid's name?
Yeah.
They're not going to. They just dump him on the side of the road. They say they're going to blow him up. And they don't take him at all.
Yeah, it must be like a lot of being a bandit. It's just like, just the presence of saying, I'm totally going to fucking kill you. It's like,
but there's that one brief shot where you see Gil's eyes when he's putting his mask on. And he seems it seems like his character design is very kind-faced. Yeah. But doesn't want Hototoe to see him. Yes. I feel like he knows Hototoe, but I don't get the feeling that Gil's the murderer at all.
No, but he specifically has the tattoo on his arm rather than the neck. Yeah.
And I'm not even sure this is Gil. I'm not sure any of these people are actually Gil's gang. I'm reasonably sure it's not.
I'm guessing they're Gil's gang in that this guy is playing the part of Gil, and they all joined up. It's like, hey, you want to join Gil's gang? And they're all like, yeah, totally. Like, none of these guys were back when Hodoko's dad was killed, that kind of thing.
And Richard Riesman is clearly super sus when he's playing nice.
Yeah.
And tries to run them off the road. It's like, sorry.
And when he sees Hototoe, he goes,
just for to avoid an animal that's banned by India.
What a cute little boy.
I'm just a regular bounty hunter, and I saw some bandit guys outside of town. You might want to check them out. And it's like, what are you doing, bud?
Yeah.
Dude. You have the kind of facial adornments on there. You got the gloves. You're voiced by Kenji Rosuda. How do you not be a bad guy?
Yeah, that's a giveaway.
I mean, I forgot as well, we got another Kenji Rosuda voice character appear in the shadows at the end of God of High School. I thought, this the guy cannot play anything but the sinister, but very polite and calm dude, can he? But
one
he does
day
very
he'll
well,
play the deep and smooth voiced hero, but up until then, it's going to be the deep and smooth voiced villain. Yeah.
There was him in Cop Crap, though. He was Anyways, back on form here. He's just being this really sly, sketchy dude.
You've got too much character design to not be up to shit.
Chase also mentions that they're mainly going after Dylan and TJ. If once they eliminate them, it should be easy to get the others to back out of the race.
Mm.
So it feels like they're just trying to win by default by everybody else dropping out rather than being killed.
The Dastardly and Muttley method.
Yes, yeah. Because their thing is they're going to block off the Valley of Despair, so they'll have to take the longer route, and then they'll just go straight through their blockage, because they've built a massive bulldozer blade on the front of their car. It's a perfect plan. What could go wrong?
But yeah, meanwhile, the lads are worried about Hodoko being missing, and at the starting line, he still hasn't shown up, and they're all going off at the same pace that they arrived in town. So I was like, okay, so it is going to keep the pace of the race up. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there have been some dudes going around, and I would say, hey, bandits from Gil's gang, give us all your food and water for them. We're not going to pay for it. What? No, this is for the racers. Just give us the stuff. Don't you know who we are?
Hmm.
And Horto's kind of reviewed the phone. I'm just going to step out for an hour or two. Just got something to look into. Don't wait up.
Yeah, I did like it. You kind of get like the apparently he seems very like I'm laser focused on just building the engine. And it's like, Aparo, are we going to go? And he's like, the kid's still not here. And he's like, I'm just going to tune up the engine another bit. It's all right because we won't be driving till like dawn comes up. Anyway, you can't drive through the Death Valley kind of thing. And it's just like, it's clearly like an excuse. It's like, this thing's ready to fucking go now. But it's nice that he kind of gets that thing. I was like, no, you go look for him.
This is after the first attempt where Kasabi goes to look for him. And here's spots his tomahawk by the box that Gil's sitting on, and he's like a tap on the box that Gil's sitting on, and he's like, "Well, have a look at that box." Kasami's like personality switching on a dime, flipping on a dime here. And Chase is like, "Okay, you can have a look at that box, but if it's not what you're looking for, I'm going to shoot you. Or we're going to play," I think is what he says. And he opens it up, and it's some sort of punk groundhog of some kind in there. And Chase is like, "Ah, well, I guess I'm going to shoot you." And then Kasami's going, "Ho to so, I'm so, where have you been?" And starts hugging and kissing this groundhog.
And he's like, "Well," and he picks up like the tomahawk. He's like, "Well, thanks, guys. I mean, ah, fucking load off my mind. Fucking amazing." And all the bandits are just like, "Did he really just fuck us over like that? Damn.
Yeah.
Impressive."
You probably could have taken him as well. There was a bit earlier on where Al would want to try out a bit of fencing because he sees Kasami doing his drills. And like Al sort of was able to disarm him. But you could get the sense, no, he was holding back something there. There's something else on his mind he doesn't want to just let out right now. He's like, well, say, like Kasami, he's a killer. You know, he's like a fucking top class horseman, but something's holding him back.
He's afraid of killing people.
Yeah.
I do. The other touch I like is the constant showing of positions during the racing scenes.
We're like getting like a feed, like it's on the sports channel kind of thing of the placements, which is like that's very not in the time, but I'm fine with it because it's more enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, those little anachronistic details, I think.
Yeah.
Make it work a lot better.
Mm.
Anything else to add before we hop on to Millionaire Detective?
No, just looking forward to seeing how they get past this crazy situation.
Yeah, I think in general you don't notice the CG-ness of it all. I think scene where it was noticeably CG was when their car was static and Hototo got out of it.
Yeah.
But in general, when you're on the externals, it's just cars versus cars. And obviously internals, it's not CG. It all works quite well. I do love TJ's, particularly when TJ's car's behind Dylan's car. It's a good clash of styles. Where if you've got Dylan in his armor-plated, super-fast tank, and then TJ comes up behind with his ridiculous eyes where his headlights should be.
It's nice that, again, like Wacky Races, they're all just such fucking completely different beasts that they're driving. I was worried initially, like, that some of the cars aren't going to work in it because, like, one's driving, like, a stock car kind of thing, but then they have it modified so it has a cover for cross-country racing, and I'm like, good, because that way you don't have to put a CG person sitting in that and fucking take me out of the whole thing.
Yes.
Obviously Gills looks like something out of Warhammer 40k. Something an awkward drive.
Slow and steady.
Then we got Millionaire Detective, episode 4. It's called Nothing Makes a Man So Adventurous as an Empty Pocket.
Yeah.
So Daisuke is in a huff and he's storming out of the house as it's being chased by Suzue, and the butler offers to drop Daisuke off in a utility vehicle to Haru.
I thought he was just going to drive him down the driveway initially. Yeah. Because he man's just walking, he's like, this is a long way to the gate.
Where they become involved in a search for a tiny white and cute dog called Shiro.
He's probably away fighting crime at a moment in time.
And Daisuke is a disadvantage this time because he has not brought his superpowers with him, his wallet and his phone.
I like the fact he's just like, it's like, hey, can you use your super butler to find out where this dog is? Sorry to call on your day off, but I figured we get it sorted pretty quick. And he's like, oh, I left it in the fucking van. No.
He does the motion, but there's nothing in his hand. It's like,
yeah,
that doesn't seem right.
I know that kind of dread, and it's whenever I've left the house and I realize I forgot the keys. It's like, oh no, I guess I'm homeless now.
Like, I can't today. I'm not feeling well.
And he's like, don't be a cheapskate, come on.
Daisuke is very lacking sympathy for this child who is missing his dog by saying, "This dog is mocking you. It has returned home."
"Please, mister, won't you help me, please?" He's like, "Oh, I don't know."
Puts on the waterworks and yes. He's like, "Yeah, okay." And he's like, "Ah, gotcha. It's a man's contract now.
It's a man's promise."
I thought the voice of the kid was the weak bit because it's a woman doing the voice and it just sounds like a woman. It doesn't sound like a small boy.
Yeah, when they say that's like, "Oh, this is a small boy." And I was like, "Oh, I thought it was a little girl." I like the character.
As they're searching for the dog and discussing the dog and the dog's ability to get back home or otherwise, then we cut back to Daisuke's house and then it goes, "Here's the metaphor, ladies and gentlemen. Daisuke, too, is a little lost dog who doesn't know his own way home."
Yeah.
They also discuss what possibly could have upset him, and they boil it down to two things. His grandmother giving him natto for breakfast, and Suzue giving him shoes, which were 2 centimeters bigger than the normal shoes he has.
Well, it's like several things. It's like the two big shoes. She asked him twice that he wants seconds. They run through that
and they settle on those two things. I think it is those two things based on the ending of the natto dish that he learns from Haru. And then
the fact when your man puts natto in the basket, he's just like, "Ugh."
Yes. And then, and then as he's leaving, it means deliberately to focus on the shoes. That's to say.
Yeah.
Those were the two straws
that broke the camel's back.
Yeah. That's why it also kind of pressuring him to eat healthier. So I'm thinking, "Oh, you're stunned by skin and bones. Do you want seconds of that?"
Yes.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
And Haru thinks Suzue is his wife, and we get a little bit more clarification that she's actually a relative.
I'm going to need to know a little. Not the way she's staying at the back computer all fucking day long, going like, "Is he okay yet?" And she's got a bag of fucking energy drinks beside her. It's like, no, I think there's a little more to it than that. But he's delighted. He's like, "Oh, I thought you had the missus at home. Okay, cool. You're not doing as badly as me then. Grand. Feels great about it."
I just think, I was on the phone. So thank God Daisuke is single. So
yes.
our cute little home life team I'm going to have here, where I make home cooked meals with love and great care, able to romance him.
Force you to watch my favorite TV show as well.
God, it was a great kind of bottle episode, because here's the guy with infinite money. He has no money to live. And also, here's a glimpse into this guy's home life, where he's just making basic food and he's just trying to impress this guy with his stylish food and cool drinks. And it's like, "Oh, we're going to watch my favorite show. A dramatization of the job I fucking do." It's like, dude, come on. Don't do that.
You're after Keith Tanaka. "Oh, I'm not after Keith. You're after Keith, you stupid chief. I'm too close."
And he's just getting drunker and drunker. He's like, "That fucking chief, man, he's a piece of shit."
And the big two different types of drunk as well. One gets louder and the other one just falls asleep. "I'm not falling asleep, I'm just resting my eyes."
He says, like, clearly, like, about to fucking keel over.
He's perfectly okay with that. He's eating all good food. The only thing he turns his nose up at, like, "Oh, check it out. Like, for a fancy guy like you, I bet you like this. I got something like nice, sliced, like, I better call ham here. Check this out." These nice guys, one bite, spits it up. "Get out." Like, "What is this? I spent a load of money down the shop getting that. I only eat the finest I better call ham. Straight from the region. Nothing else will do."
It's also worth mentioning at this point that Daisuke is dressed like Osamatsu.
I fucking love that. I did like the big fucking pink jumper. Oh, great stuff. And they're like, "Is this all you got?" It's like, "Yeah, my Osamatsu costume. Shut up." I like the fact that it kind of goes, like, just as a subtle thing with the ham, it's just like, yeah, if you buy the big fancy thing, it's probably not that fucking great. But if you actually just make the food yourself, it probably tastes pretty good because you've made it to like it, you know, that kind of way. You put as much sauce as you like on it, that kind of way.
Yeah. Also, like, Daisuke, they've never had sweet potato soju before. If he's ever had something that people have brewed up with potatoes because they had nothing else to make booze with, he's used to caviar and finest Russian vodka. This will blow his tiny little mind.
And it turns out in the end that the dog's dead. But Daisuke has fixed this problem by buying the dog's identical brother.
Well, he didn't buy it. Because he passes your man the bill. And he's like, hey, it's like...
No, he has bought it because it's in the bill at the end. It's in the bill at the end.
He must have paid him back then. Yes. Yeah. I thought that bill was for just...
No, I think that was the money to pay him. I think that was a written check or something to pay.
It would be fun if that was like if it was your man's just like written expenses and it was just this is his expenses for this thing which worked out like something like 400 or something euro
something like that. It was 50,000 yen for the dog.
It was mostly the dog, like so.
Make sure to tell the kid's parents that it's a different dog and that the other dog got run over.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, and your man's just like, what the fuck, I gotta pay for? And then he sees the kid, like, delighted that he's a dog. It's the brother of the same dog. And so he's kind of like, I don't want to disappoint the kid, though. And himself and all his friends were going around with their little hand-drawn, have you seen my dog posters?
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, this is fine. It was a shitty situation. This is the best we can do out of it. So it's a nice little episode. As the show it fucking is consistently, I suppose.
When are they going to kiss?
They've already gotten like completely like blotto with each other, so I'm not fucking sure what'll manage it at this stage.
No, it'll be a constant tease.
Mm.
Don't want to make the mistake most of these shows make.
I'll just marry them off like early on, and then there's no tension there. Yeah.
That was pretty much it. And then he goes home and feeds his family the natto meal.
I like the way it was presented as like, look at this fancy thing I fucking learned. It's like, it's very basic shit you're doing here. Even like the cracking of the pepper, and it's just like, you fucking...
Yeah, because while Suzui's upset and worried about him, the grandmother's like, it will do him good to learn to live a bit without having to rely on his money all the time.
Which he says, like, looking at him on the fucking back computer as he's, like, bumping into someone in the supermarket and, like, apologizing. And it's just like, he'll be grand. Fucking day sleeping in the bathtub. It'll do him good.
Humbling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, Healing Good, Pretty Cure, episode 19. Save Rate, Wind of Prayers and Miracle Girl.
I don't know why it's always... rendered that way, because it's clearly latte. Because latte, you know, a coffee, you know, it's kind of a sweet little thing. Nice thing for a sweet little dog. Her mother was called Lady Teatine. You know, we got a whole theme going on here, but whatever. But puppy is sick. From a non-giant monster related illness, and it's like, yeah, that'll happen. You know, or diseases out there dogs can get that don't involve giant monsters. So you just got to listen. All the minor dogs got a little cold here, so just mind the dog. I feel like, oh, we're going to mind the puppy. We're so worried about you. And it's a good episode for kind of giving some characterization to the cute little mascot then, because she feels weak and inadequate, because it feels like everybody's always taking care of her. Sure, she serves at the purpose of being like the early warning alarm for when a monster show up, but it just feels like, oh, yeah, then I get sick and they got... bust your ass fighting a giant monster to make me feel better. I feel like I'm really holding people back here. They're just kind of flashing back to her ma'am, the lady, Teatine in the garden. It's like, no, well, you're going to be the queen one day, kid, you know, and just in your own way, you just got to be strong. You got to be a strong leader. But it happens that while she's sick, the alarm system doesn't work. So that gives time for a monster to run amok up on top of the mountain there, which escaped her knowledge, such as the fact that it's only getting reports from local townspeople, like they get a phone call at Chiu's family's inn, and phone saying, giant monster on the mountain, Jesus Christ. Okay, make sure the guests are well, are taken care of and safe. It's amazing how quickly the town has adapted to regular giant monster incursions. So they're sort of used to it. Not wondering where they're coming from, what's the government or all the authorities doing about this. This seemed to be like fairly easy going. About, oh yeah, those three girls will show up and kick it to death. Won't they? Yeah, it'll be fine. Mm. But the girls got to get up there and take it out. I was initially thinking, oh, because Batati Moody is lurking around, he wants to cause some trouble. He's looking around, why would I turn into a monster today? And I was thinking, there's a windsock on top there. I thought, windsock? Okay, because you've had a few lazy ones in the last while. I mean, one of them was at a Scarlet Wellington boot. What's a windsock going to be like? It feels like you're kind of really phoning it in now. But it was a pretty cool-looking monster, in fairness. It had a sort of windsock hula skirt, and then a Kamen Rider-esque flowing scarf as well. So it wasn't that bad. But I guess it's time to grow to a larger size in the delay of getting there, and it's starting to overpower the girls. It's snatched open the tendrils, and then Latte can voice stand by helplessly. It's like, oh, they're fighting for me, and they're getting messed up, and it's all my fault because got here too late. Now it's huge, and this feels completely useless. Then flashing back, you gotta be strong, Latte. You gotta be a good leader. You gotta be the queen. And then you get the little puppy dog summoning up all her will and gumption, and she starts biting on that giant monster's tail. It's like, come on, bite the shit out of you. Come here. This thing is like 1,000 times your size, but you're going to try anyway. It keeps getting batted back, but keeps coming in, trying to bite the tail off. And the girl is saying, don't do it, Latte. He's going to kill you. Just back off. We'll figure it out to save yourself. And then Lady Teotine, trapped inside the Kuro Oasis garden, just like, I can feed my baby, my only baby. She's in danger, but I'm powerless to help her. I beseech you, pretty Kuro of old, save my darling puppy dog daughter. And flash of light, a tornado of lilac. And then who is this? Who is that? There's another pretty Kuro lady there. And just deftly, elegantly, dispatches the monster. This completely immobilizes it, and this friend says, okay, do your thing, shoot the beam and finish it off. They do so, and they're like, who is this? Where did you come from? She's able to make element bottles appear without us having to do the thing with the accessory, with the little doctor's bag and accompanying telescope available in all good shops this Christmas. Who is this one? This is a luring blonde lady in her civilian guise. We're going to find out who it is next week. Obviously, she's a fourth pretty cure from way back in the day. But what's her deal? And why does she want to take our darling puppy dog Latte away? We'll find out next time. Exciting stuff. Another, like when the regularly numbered one, the one that wasn't really part of the team, shows up to stir things throughout the formula.
So is she clearly like older than the other ones as well as...
Clearly older than them, yeah. Yeah. Seems to be like an older woman that definitely tolls them. Like even her, like her design in her particular form, it sort of has this sort of kind of Greek god / Valkyrie motif going on in deference to their kind of very hugely embellished doctor's coats.
Yeah, Athena from Saint Seiya.
Yes, actually, the purple hair should have been a giveaway in that. I'm kind of wondering when was Batate Muda, the mutated Koipu Nutria, whatever you want to call it, has been doing a lot of legwork lately, and the other three are just lounging around in the lair not doing anything. Like, I wonder if they're going to come back into the mix, because I feel like he's been on the last run for 7 or 8 of them, I think. He's a new hire. I was trying to impress the senpais in that, but I kind of wanted to bring those other three back into orbit somehow, because they're fun characters too.
Has he been around for basically this second Kerr? Is he like the second Kerr villain?
Yeah, I suppose. But it isn't like the other three like are dispensed with. They're just still there. They're just lazy. But I suppose now we're going to have like four villains. I mean, now we're going to have four pretty heroes to pair off with them now. So I guess maybe they'll see some more matchups then down the line. Which was pretty fun. Always a good time with this. And I'd seen this puppy dog summon all her fighting spirit and started biting a giant monster in the tail. It's like, grr, I'm going to gnaw you. Go get him. Good characterization, as I said, for the cute little dog character. He's got enough skin in this fight as well along the rest of them.
Suzuko Mimori is doing the voice of Cure Earth. Apparently. There we go.
All right.
Well into her playing adults part of her career now, I guess. as opposed to plain children who tell you that they're 30 years old in D.D. Fist of the North Star. Okay. That is it for this week, unless anybody watched any of One Piece. I watched half of it. It wasn't worth commenting on, I thought.
I like the bit where Hiyo finally does something.
What's coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness?
Clone High has been deferred because our guest who we want to have on is on holiday for 2 weeks. But we get him on the way back. And in the meantime, there will be a Draw Number Live. We're looking at the Oddball Couple versus the Oddball Couple, its cartoon incarnation.
You said Oddball and Oddball again.
Did I do that again? That happened all the time.
You kept saying Oddball instead of Odd Couple, and it's just, I don't know why. So look forward to that.
The 1970s television series based on a Neil Simon play versus the Oddball Couple, the cartoon version with a dog and a cat instead of Jack Clubin and Tony Randall. Okay. One here, like that happened about 10 times in a row. That'll be the podcast for you.
Blame the heat. I think that's good culprit for everything. I'm slowly putting up the remaining Anthony episodes of Dynamite in the Brain. So the Haikyuu one went up, and I'll get another one up this weekend. And then we can start on season two, which we've already recorded the first one with Dwayne and Bradley. Which I should be up before the end of August, because I'm going to do an episode with Bradley that I want to get up ASAP. Because we'll be talking about Tiger Mask, but we'll also talk about the New Japan show, which would have aired the day before.
Cool.
Otherwise, let's ask Niall the question we have to ask him every week. What day shall we three meet again?
I divine it. I look into my scrying glass, which is this empty glass of water. The ice is already melted. And August 18th is telling me the tea leaves. August 18th for 7:30.
Excellent. Which seems updated the calendar for that. Right, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. I'm dreading having to edit this video and indeed the podcast. But hopefully, at least we got video this time. Let's look on the bright side after last week.
I don't know why my regular camera is working now, with the new camera that I set up isn't fucking working, and it's just like, gag.
It got jealous.
I just need to make my camera jealous every week to get it to work.
We're back next week on the Tuesday with more. Let's go. Goodbye.
Bye.
See ya.